Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
And that's it.
Yep, we kicked Lyle off the show.
Finally, I've been trying for ages.
I know. It's hard when you have to work next to the guy every day.
Where is he? Is he in Canada?
Yeah, he's up in Canada now.
Okay, cool.
Not sure where currently, yeah. Though.
I don't care.
No,
I'm just kidding. I hope he's having a wonderful time.
Yep.
So yeah, we got a ton of news this week, hey?
If by we you mean the geek community in general, then yes.
I do.
If you mean us personally, then perhaps no.
You and I never have any news. It's always Lyle with doing the interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I have an excuse. I have a kid.
I have an excuse and that I don't do anything. But yeah, the big news, which will probably be about a week old by the time this uploads, is D&D 5th edition, at least the basic set, will be free.
Yeah! Not only is it out, but it's free.
No, it's not currently out. Like, the PDF won't be released until August,
Spoil
I think.
Spoil all my fun.
Sorry. But that makes sense, because I think it's sometime in August, because they said they are releasing the free PDF of basic D&D with the D&D starter box.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because at first I was like, oh, great, I can grab, D&D right now. And then I'm like, oh, it's not out yet.
Yeah.
But, I mean, why? It makes sense. Why put that out when, doing that might eat into the sales of the starter box a little bit?
True.
You don't want to punish people who are willing to buy the physical product by making them wait longer for it than people who are going to buy the PDF.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, I was kind of surprised. It's going to be, they kind of likened it to the rule cyclopedia, where you're going to get the four basic classes, fighter, cleric, thief, wizard. And they also said the kind of most, I guess, archetypal subclass for each of those.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to get the four races of, human, dwarf, elf, and halfling.
Right.
And there was some speculation about whether you would get a sub race for each of those four choices.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to get advancement rules all the way up to level 20.
Yeah, that really blew my mind. That's not a limited thing. It's you can play the whole game just out of this PDF.
Right. And they said as new rules are introduced through other products, for example, Tyranny of Dragons or other story modules, those rules will be made available as free updates.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah, they said they're even going to have monsters in it and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, the social media exploded
when yeah.
they found that out. And a lot of people were saying it was a very smart move for Wizards of the Coast to do. And other people were, in my opinion, very smartly pointing out that it was kind of the only thing for them to do. Because a lot of other very popular games have been free or are currently free for a while. So, as one person put it, if D&D wants to regain the pole position, this is something they had to do.
Yeah. So. Well, we've been talking about it for, who knows how long, that there's so many games out there, like Savage Worlds and whatnot, that have such a low entry cost that it's nothing to jump in. And you can't set the entry cost much lower than free.
Right.
So, and it's actually what we were talking about last week, too, when we were talking about wondering about what they were going to do as far as a PDF for it. We were saying that they should probably follow something like iTunes, make it extremely cheap and extremely accessible, make it easier to get than it is to pirate. And lo and behold. So,
yeah.
We could work for Wizards. Hire us!
Well, yeah, I'm sure they were planning that before they listened to our episode, wishful thinking that they actually listened to that. But, yeah. No, and as people pointed out, Fate, Eclipse Phase, Dungeon World, 13th Age, Pathfinder, a bunch of other games are free.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So good on them. That's fantastic. I'm so happy. And, I was thinking that there might be a kind of an additional motive to this is to try and gather the various edition players. Because I was thinking if I was playing 4E, if I was kind of a diehard D&D fan, well, I am a diehard D&D fan, but if I was still playing 4E regularly and 5E came out, I might think that, well, I've already got all these 4E books, I don't want to go and start spending money to buy a new edition. But if it's free, then, there's no roadblock to just go on to the next edition.
Right, absolutely. It's free. I mean, the only thing you have to invest is the time to download it and read through it.
Exactly.
And then if you say, yeah, I prefer my older edition, well, at least you've read it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you'll go back to playing whatever you want to play. Or the fact that it's free and you don't have to buy anything might convince you to, you know, switch over mm-hmm. if you like what you see in 5e better.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some people like to convert stuff and they could say, okay, we can play 5e just with all this 4th edition or 3rd edition or whatever material we have for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's probably going to speed the uptake as far as, like, gaming store groups go and everything like that, which would make more people kind of center in on this version. So, yeah, it's a brilliant move. It's I don't know how profitable it's going to be, but it's brilliant.
Well, the same people who were kind of pointing out that, you know, this is something Wizards had to do, were pointing out that the market has already proven that customers are willing to pay for print, premium, or professional content.
Mm-hmm.
Because the basic system for a lot of games are already free, but people are willing to buy the hardback book or willing to buy like the adventure module or willing to buy things that are, you know, professionally put together.
Right.
Just because it's kind of easier.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that the PDF that Wizards of the Coast is going to put out for 5th edition is going to be unprofessional, because I'm sure they're going to, you know, make it look as nice as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's definitely a market for people to buy accessories to a free base system.
Oh, absolutely. So, and there's a lot of collectors within the RPG hobby who just want the book because they want it.
Right. And somebody else said, and I agree with them, that Wizards of the Coast needs to put whatever money they would have saved from, like, printing these books and whatever into advertising.
Mm.
Because people who are already part of the hobby are probably going to check out D&D, even if they had to pay a little bit for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people were balking at the fact that all three of the books cost $50 each.
Right.
But, you know, the starter box or you know, I'm sure people would pay, you know, between $15 and $25 to check it out. But now that it's free, all the people who have never played a role-playing game before, because D&D is kind of a brand name now, and people know about the franchise even if they haven't played the role-playing game yet, those are the people you're really going to want to try and hook with this free product.
Absolutely. And speaking of the franchise, too, there's movies and games that have the D&D name on them. It wouldn't be too hard for Wizards to just put a little bit of text on there and say, you want to try out the game? Go here and download it for free.
Yeah, but who would be watching the D&D movies now, based on what they were?
Okay, yeah, not the movies. Some of the games, maybe.
Okay, some of the games.
Yeah. Speaking of movies, there's a brand new movie coming out called Dark Dungeons.
I watched the trailer for that. It looks pretty good.
It looks hilarious.
It does.
It doesn't look very realistic, you know, like a whole bunch of frat boys, you know, good-looking guys with beer at a college party saying, "Let's RPG!" Not exactly what really happens.
Well, no, but I mean, like, oh, come on. It's based on the Jack Chick Dark Dungeon track where the girl hangs herself because her character dies in the game.
Exactly.
And whatever version of fantasy role-playing game that group is playing, the rule states when your character dies, you're out of the group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, we should probably give you a little bit of the backstory. I'm sure everyone listening is familiar with the Chick Tracks, but just in case you aren't, they're a series of, I suppose they're religiously motivated, aren't they?
Yes.
Okay, there's not political ones as well, are there?
There could be, but the ones I know are religious.
Yeah, and basically it was a whole bunch of things about how evil, you know, the Reefer is and things like that. And one of the most famous ones is called Dark Dungeons, where it's a comic strip exposing the evils of role-playing and how it's about summoning demons and, tends to kids to do murder and suicide and things like that.
Yep.
So, yeah. Anyway, this one, the name of the guy is J.R. Rawls, and he won a lottery. He figured, well, I've got a little bit of money. I'm going to try and put it together and make a movie out of this Chick track. And amazingly, he got a hold of Jack Chick, who never does interviews or anything like that, but he was very open to letting him use the rights for the movie and did it for free, too.
I have to wonder, because the guy went through Kickstarter to help produce this movie, and it's going to be released at Gen Con this year.
Yeah.
And I watched the, you know, Kickstarter video, and watching it, the guy is completely serious,
mm-hmm.
But the subject matter is so ridiculous.
Isn't it though?
Where I'm thinking, okay, this guy does deadpan perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
First, I was a little bit confused. But I'm like, okay, there's no way this movie can't be a satire.
Right.
So I think it has the potential to be absolutely hilarious.
I agree. And I think you're right. But I think the only way that they could have made this movie is by playing it straight. You know, if you tried to make a satire of something that's so ridiculous to start with, it would be over the top from the very get-go. And I think it was a perfect choice to try and make it as a straight horror chiller movie that's also, you know, hilarious.
Right. So it has a potential to be one of those movies that are so bad,
mm-hmm.
it's good.
Yeah. That's probably the aim as far as I can see.
Yeah.
Yeah, if anybody wants to check it out, you can go to darkdungeonsthemovie.com, and they have the trailer, the original comic, and all the information up there. Check it out. I don't know why I said that.
I don't know.
So we'll get right into tonight's topic. Yeah, this one's a bit of a contentious one. We've been fighting about it. When I say we, I mean myself and Wayne, because we fight about everything. But yeah. We've been fighting about this topic for a very long time, and that is anime. And so I originally brought it up as one of the movie genre ideas, but we've had a very long discussion about it, and we've come to the conclusion that it's not really a genre per se. It's more of a medium, of an art style that any different kind of genre can fall under. But that said, of course, in a role-playing game, it's mostly by storytelling. There's not very much of a visual element to it. So it's very difficult to represent an art style, and thus it's probably not a very applicable genre to use in-game, as Wayne argued ad
right.
nauseum.
Right.
But after quite a bit of discussion, we decided that there are still enough unique elements and themes within anime to be able to put games out about it, which is obvious because there are a lot of published games out there that are based around anime. For example, Big Eyes, Small Mouth, that made one that we always make fun of Wayne for buying.
Right.
The one that I just read about today, what was it again? It was...
Penny Explosion Perfect?
That's the one, yeah. Which looks like an amazing game.
It does, it looks great, and has been renamed Tokyo Brain Pop.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, of course I remember, arguing with you about this for a long time.
Too.
As you said. Yeah. And, yeah, I saw anime as... a skin that you could wrap around basically any genre mm-hmm. to turn it into an anime game. The problem that I was having separately was, and we were discussing this previously, is I wanted to run an Aeon Flux game, or I've been thinking about running an Aeon Flux game, and that is almost entirely visual style.
Because
mm-hmm. otherwise it's just kind of like a sci-fi, spy, action, adventure kind of game. And I kind of hit a brick wall and thought, there's no way to represent this visually in a role-playing game, so I'm just going to scrap the whole idea, which is kind of my problem, or was my problem, with anime. I'm like, how do you represent something in a role-playing game that is, by and large, only a specific visual style? I don't mm-hmm. think you can. As you said, Chris, there's so many genres that anime can do that, I didn't really see it as a genre.
Mm-hmm.
But part of what, or a large part of what made me think that it was possible to do was a very funny IO9 article called 10 Completely Annoying Anime Clichés. And yeah, those 10 completely annoying anime clichés are exactly why I don't watch anime anymore, because they are in absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm.
But reading that article made me think, yes, these are elements that if you use them in a game, regardless of what you made the game look like through your narrations, it would feel like an anime game.
Right.
And that made me think, okay, there are specific elements that you can use to make your game more like an anime, and therefore doing it is actually possible.
Mm-hmm. So when we looked at it, there are a few different, I don't want to say genres because I think it's a little misleading, but demographic groups that the manga and anime producing companies break their audiences into. And I'm just going to give them quick for reference, because we'll be giving quite a few explanations to them later on. First one is shonen, which is for young boys and teenage boys, all the way from age 10 to maybe 17.
Whatever, because boys never really grow up.
This is true. These ones, you're probably familiar with Dragon Ball Z, Pokemon, a lot of any of the sports manga. Things like that. They're very action, excitement, those kinds of things. There's also shoujo, which is for young girls about the same age group. These ones, for example, Hana Yori Dango is one, which obviously my notes, it looks like they've autocorrected to say Hana Yori Dingo, which is quite funny. These are much more relationship-based. The artwork is focused on kind of the cute, the beautiful. They feature lots of flowers. A Western example might be something like Twilight or Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, I was going to say one that probably everybody is familiar with is Sailor Moon.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, that's one. This is Sailor Moon's 20th anniversary, by the way.
Oh, no kidding.
So, yep, they're rebooting the series. So.
Woot. Another one is Seinen, which is for older boys, and that goes from the 17 all the way up to 40s and 50s. But it's a little bit deeper plots, darker, a little bit more intelligent, and a lot more sex and nudity, because, you know, it's for adults, that kind of thing. And then the last one then is Josei, which means woman, and again, is for adult women. These ones, I don't really know that much about it, but from what I was looking up, it seemed to fall mainly into two camps. One was kind of a slice of life, you know, the lives of adult women playing against other adult women. It was kind of like a Desperate Housewives kind of thing. And then the other camp was kind of like trashy romance novels, like something with that would have Fabio on the cover, except a Japanese version of it.
Right.
I don't want to say that's that genre definitively, but that seems to be the examples that I saw.
I think that sums it up pretty good. Yeah, the different types.
Yeah. So we're not actually going to talk about those specifically, but we're going to relate a lot of the elements that we will discuss to those genres. So we'll just go through and give some examples of the elements and then how we think they could be related to or put into a game to make it anime-flavored.
One of the cliches on the IO9 article that, I completely agree with because I agreed with all of them, was the fact that in anime, nobody seems to be above a certain age. That's around like 22 or 24. Not to say adults don't exist in anime, but the majority of the protagonists are pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
And also don't have one or possibly both parents.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it might not be that the parents are dead or are absent. It's just that they are not often featured in the anime.
Mm-hmm.
And that same with any kind of adults in a lot of things. I get the sense that that is because of the audience that the anime is geared towards, especially if it's geared for, like, you know, shonen and shoujo, the young kids. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't necessarily want to read about stories that feature adults doing things because they themselves are not adults, and so they want to identify with protagonists that are around their same age.
Mm-hmm.
Because the media is animated, it also might be people not wanting to have to illustrate and animate a lot of extraneous characters.
That's one less voice actor you need to pay, huh?
exactly. So let's not, you know, put those other people in there. But that's honestly not that different from something, you know, like, I don't know, Dawson's Creek or Gossip Girl or any of the other kind of teen dramas where we're not showing adults all that much because the focus of the story is on these teenagers, and that's what our audience is going to be.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. Exactly, those are the protagonists, and the stories revolve around how they deal with their problems. And a lot of the stories and themes in these younger ones, like the shonen and the shoujo, are towards, you know, growing up and becoming mature, and thus learning how to handle life on your own. I think that there is a bit of a difference, though, in between anime and some of the Western stories, in that a lot of the Western stories, there will be some family drama that deals with other members of the family. An example I'm thinking of is maybe like the Buffy TV show, where so many episodes revolved around Buffy trying to hide information from her mom and from her sister, and then them getting involved in the plot. And
that's
something that doesn't really happen a lot in anime stories. Not to say not at all, but there was one I was watching with my wife, Yu Yu Hakusho, which is about ghosts and demon hunters.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And the protagonist's mom is kind of an alcoholic, completely irresponsible woman. And there's maybe, I don't know, maybe one episode that deals with her. But by the time you get to the second season, he's completely out on his own. They've completely forgotten about any kind of family that he has.
Yeah, I mean, from one perspective, it's kind of weird. But on the other hand, as we said, like, the audience probably doesn't want to read about that sort of thing or watch that sort of thing. So how to use that in a game? Well, obviously, just make your protagonist pretty young.
and take away their parents.
Yeah, take away their parents.
And thankfully, a lot of role players do that themselves in the background. I have no family.
Exactly. I was thinking, hey, you play a Dungeons & Dragons game. It's already practically an anime because no one has any parents. You know, everybody's just kind of, well, they might not be young, mm-hmm. but there's not a lot of family drama, mm-hmm. if at all. But I don't know. Part of why, and maybe this will come up later, but part of why I thought the cliches, and they are cliches from that IO9 article, which we'll link in the show notes, by the way, because I keep referring to it, mm-hmm. would be good for an anime game, would be if these things were exaggerated. So I think that's certainly not the only way to do it, mm-hmm. but because you don't have the visual, you know, cues of this is anime, I think you have to really push some of these things to make it feel like an anime. And I'm sure one of the themes we'll get into later is that things are occasionally, or almost always, over the top in anime. And so that's why I think really driving these elements home isn't that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. So I would say kind of push it and make everybody, or almost everybody in the game world, pretty young.
Yeah, go for it.
Because again, thinking of like Gundam, I mean, how many times have they made Gundam? How many Gundam series are there? I don't know because I don't watch it, but I mean, a lot. And in every single one, the main protagonist is an under 20 male.
Yeah, exactly. A little boy.
Exactly. So I would say use that, push that, and make all your protagonists pretty young.
Yeah.
Ridiculously young in some points.
Feel free to go over the top.
Right.
Which actually leads into the first element that I had on my list was exaggeration.
Hmm.
And that's, it's, again, more common to the shonen genre than the others, but I'm sure everybody's seen it with Final Fantasy, the enormous swords, and several other ones with enormous guns, or bikes that go past light speed, things like that.
Right, or if you go into seinen territory, enormous boobs.
Exactly, I hadn't thought about that one, but yes. Exactly, that's, I think, pushing the envelope is part of anime. You look at something like Dragon Ball Z, and the entire series is based around constantly one-upping the opponents, having a bigger, more powerful spell, weapon, martial arts move, whatever it might be. So I think a part of it that you can bring anime feeling into your game is by removing any caps that are there by the game rules or by physics. Of course, you don't want to just let the players go completely wild, but just give them a lot more leeway with what they're going to be able to do.
I think this might be one of the things, like, I completely agree with you in principle, mm-hmm. because, a big theme in, you know, some types of anime is the complete ridiculousness of what's happening. But I don't know if I would necessarily pull out the stops and limits mechanically.
Mm-hmm.
For some games that might work, for some game systems that might work.
Yeah.
I think it would be more like, kind of like what they have in Exalted, that stunting mechanic where, great, you describe your character doing something over the top and appropriate for, you know, the anime genre,
mm-hmm.
because that's just what we do.
Yeah.
That's what this game is. And I would say it's the GM's kind of responsibility then to do the same thing, mm-hmm. to help the players get into that mindset. But I don't know if I would necessarily always do that with the mechanics. Because it is still a game, and you don't want things to get completely broken and unbalanced.
Mm-hmm.
Unless maybe you're playing like Dragon Ball Z, and then like, who cares? Exactly. Reality goes out the window, and just like
you've turned into a giant monkey and are currently smashing the moon. What?
Right, right. Like, oh, hold on. Like, let me get all the dice from everyone everywhere and just dump it on this table because that's how over the top this thing currently is.
Exactly. That said, though, actually, I didn't think of it before, but you bring up a really good point there with the Exalted system. I think that the stunting mechanic is a pretty self-contained part of that game that could be ported to other games pretty easily.
Mm.
So the basic rundown of the stunting mechanic is you can get up to 3 bonus die, or in other games it might be a +3 bonus or something similar to that.
Mm.
The first one is where, when you do an action, you give a description that impacts the senses. For example, if you did a punch, you could describe how you could feel the wind riffling through the air or something. Just something a little bit +1.
Taste the sweat from my fist.
That's actually a good example. Disgusting, but good. A two die stunt is using some of the continuing action or scenery, so kind of pulling your action off of another character's action, or I don't know, maybe pulling down a wall so that you utilize part of the scenery within your action, which is exactly what I said the first time. And a three die stunt is where you quote must take the player's breath away. You do something that's incredible, amazing. Everybody is completely blown away by it.
Hmm.
I think these largely come down to the GM's decision about how many die you're allowed to get from your description, but
right.
That's the basic idea of how it goes, and I don't see any reason why you couldn't do bonuses for description in any game.
Hmm. Yeah, obviously, that would work better if you have, like, a die pool system. I'm thinking, like, you know, Cortex Plus or something with all the different dice you roll, or...
Oh, you could even do it with D&D. Just add a plus 2, plus 4, plus 6 bonus to the dice.
Oh, yeah, sure. I was thinking that adding an actual die to the roll is a bit more dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that kind of sounds like what they do in Wushu, where
yes.
You can describe your character doing as much as you want, and each little bit of the description adds another D6 to your resolution roll.
But a way to utilize that, then, is to allow the players to go over the top with their descriptions, but allow the GM to award the whatever kind of bonuses might apply. That way, you don't have to worry about system-breaking things.
Yeah, good point. Well, kind of dovetailing in with the exaggeration.
Mm-hmm.
One of the tropes or cliches of anime seems to be extraordinary things happen without anybody really getting freaked out about it.
Yeah, I'm getting an example here.
Okay. I forget the name of the anime I was watching a while back, but basically... this guy found a fully functional and discarded cyborg in the trash.
Oh, Battle Angel Alita.
That's the same setup. It was actually a different one. Okay. I remember the name of that. That's an actually a decent anime.
Gundam?
This was no, Battle Angel Gundam. It's the same thing. This was like
tricky, actually.
Yeah, I know. This was like a kind of like a shoujo manga where it was going to be like, okay, these two people are going to have a relationship rather than wacky hijinks ensue.
Mm-hmm.
But still. I don't know. It seems like another one is do you know Fooly Cooly, FLCL? Again, he's kind of like a normal guy, except he has a horn growing out of his head, and every once in a while it gets incredibly big, and some kind of monster grows out of his head.
That's interesting.
However, nobody really seems to notice.
Okay.
I mean, they notice when the monster rampages through,
<Yeah.
laughs> but. But nobody goes, where the heck did this monster come from?
Uh-huh.
Or why is there suddenly a monster destroying it? It's, I don't know, it's kind of like, a bit like Godzilla, where nobody really goes, oh my gosh, where did this thing come from? It's kind of like, this seems to be a normal occurrence.
Hmm.
So, I don't really know how you would put that into a game other than not having people react to stuff.
Uh-huh.
But it seems like the setup of your game can be a lot more extreme than other types of games. Like, player characters, or rather, the players, always want to know where things come from, but in anime...
say, don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't worry about it. And none of the other characters seem to be worrying about it either. Except the ones that are, you know, directly impacted by it, which won't be all that many because there aren't any adults anywhere.
Hmm. There are a lot of very strange settings with a lot of very strange things happening in it. For example, there's Pokemon, of course, where there's all these weird creatures running around and people, you know, catch them and throw them around in balls. But that's kind of just the world. I think it's less people not reacting than people are used to this being the world.
Yeah, Pokemon is kind of... I mean, you think too deeply about Pokemon, and you're like, okay, do people in that world eat meat? And if so, does that mean they're eating Pokemon? But,
yeesh.
Yeah, I mean, they probably are. No, or, again, I forget the Japanese title, but have you watched the anime All Cultural Cat Girl Nuku Nuku?
Oh, yeah. What's the name of that?
I forget in Japanese, but again...
That's not what I am.
Robot inventor finds a mostly intact cyborg in the trash and just kind of takes it home and puts it together, where there doesn't seem to be other robots walking around in the setting, or like Ranma 1/2 or any of the other numerous kind of exotic girlfriend themes where it's like, okay, no one is really questioning where this girl came from, despite the fact she's floating around or, you know, doing weird things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So... maybe this kind of gets into the laws of reality being a lot more relaxed in anime.
Yeah.
But it's also something, it's also a bit about, okay, yeah, you, the players, are just going to have to go with it because that's kind of what anime is. It's just these extremely bizarre situations, usually happening to, you know, very young protagonist, who then for some reason doesn't go to the police or doesn't get adults involved to help solve this problem.
Well, that's true.
Because then, of course, the show would be over, but yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that was one of the problems with Pacific Rim. Maybe they gave too much explanation about where the kaiju came from.
Ah, maybe.
No, I take it that there was far more problems than that. Did I tell you, I finally got to watch that?
No, you didn't.
And you're right, it was crap.
so many plot holes.
Yeah.
Kaiju-sized plot holes.
Exactly. And that leads me into Mecha, giant robots, stomp, stomp, rawr. Sorry. This is obvious. There's a lot of them from spanning from Gundam to Evangelion to Robotech, Macross. There's a whole bunch of different kinds of gigantic robots that fly around, run around, and shoot each other.
Yeah, we were having the initial discussion about what made something anime, because it's not only giant stompy robots.
Exactly, yeah. I think you brought up that Battletech is not anime, but it still has giant robots in it.
Right, right. Yeah. And, yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking about, what sparked this discussion, is unless you narrate it looking like anime, there's not going to be a difference between an air-quote anime game that uses giant stompy robots and a Battletech game that uses giant stompy robots. And so the fact that both of those things can be in the game and one's anime and the other isn't means that there was something else missing to make the game anime.
Well, part of it is, again, the you know, relaxed take on how the universe works. You know, the rules of physics need not apply here. In a lot of the anime games, there's the Gundams, for example, the amount of stress torsion you would need to actually make the robots be able to jump and flip and move around like that. Or actually, even more.
How about just stand up?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could make up new kinds of unobtainium-like materials that they're made out of, but the laws of physics don't really work like that.
Mm.
Those robots with that shape could not really function. They would crush themselves under their own weight. So there you have it, you know, throw science out the window and then just make a giant robot because it's cool.
Right.
And there you have it. That's anime in a nutshell.
Or Pacific Rim, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh. I guess by that criteria, Pacific Rim was kind of anime, at least inspired, because things wouldn't have been able to stand up.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'd forgotten about that. I don't know how, but yeah, good point.
Yeah, and there are some games that try to replicate this. There's Cthulhu Tech, for example.
Right.
Actually, Robotech is a game in and of itself. I think Palladium puts that one out, or used to. And then one that surprised me, actually, was Heavy Gear.
Okay.
I'm not so sure about this, but a few people in some forums were claiming that Heavy Gear is based off of anime. However, I've played Heavy Gear before, and I love the game, but it's very scientifically based. You spend a lot of work actually putting together your robot. I don't say scientifically, you don't actually get into like the weights and stress levels of it, but there's a rather involved construction process to it that is more on building a working good machine versus something that's just cool.
Fair enough, but I mean, Mecha is definitely inspired by anime, because that's the first time I think it showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So by that logic, you could say that anything that has mecha in it is far enough, you're far enough back, and it's inspired by anime because that's the medium that these giant robots grew out of.
Right.
So, because I was about to say, like, I wouldn't necessarily call Cthulhu Tech anime, or call it an anime game.
Anime?
I don't think so. I think it's, I could be completely wrong, but I'm pretty sure the creators just said, hey, let's mash these two things together that you wouldn't normally put together and see what we get.
I see.
And again, maybe I'm completely wrong, but that's the way I think it came about.
Okay. Well, no, I mean, I think you have a very good point that merely adding mecha doesn't make a game into an anime game. However, adding mecha can definitely take you a big step forward in making your game feel more anime-esque.
Well, yeah, and again, I think it's like you have to not necessarily add all these things, but it's the mecha with the over-the-top nature of them, you know, shooting gigantic laser beams and doing flips and, you know, pulling giant swords out of nowhere, and, you know, or transforming into giant swords, even though
for even bigger robots to use.
Okay, that'd be pretty cool. But yeah, it's those couple of things together that would really make a game feel anime-esque.
Absolutely.
Well, and since we're talking about giant robots, one of the elements that they mention in Big Eyes, Small Mouth 3rd Edition is collateral damage. Mm-hmm. Which, again, it's not exclusive to anime. I mean, you think about, like, Godzilla movies, which are Japanese, and there's a lot of collateral damage in that.
Oh, yeah.
But, I don't know, it seems like maybe we should have just had one element, and it's over the top. Because, in a lot of animes, there are those massive explosions, things get completely destroyed, entire cities are blown up, and I'm not going to say nothing ever happens because of it, mm-hmm. but I don't know, it's kind of not really addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it doesn't have to be addressed, depending on the tone of story you're telling. Because I've watched some darker animes where the collateral damage is very much part of, what's going on, and then the result of the, explosion or whatever is an important part of the story. Whereas right. other kind of lighter-hearted animes were just like, yeah, okay, everything blew up. Things are maybe destroyed, but no people are.
Yeah, yeah. And they'll so like the guy with his crushed house was like, what do I do now? Kind of jokingly afterwards.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I remember seeing, I don't remember the name of it, but I remember seeing an anime a long time ago that actually had an interesting take on that, where whenever the good guys and bad guys would fight, they're kind of like super powered people where they jump off of buildings and shoot mm-hmm. lasers out of their eyes and whatnot. But they would form these kind of bubbles of copied reality around them. So it would take wherever they are. If they're in a city, this huge bubble would extend over the city, and it would make an interdimensional copy, so they could destroy as much as they want, but when they teleported back, the regular city was still okay.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool take on it.
That's one way to do it.
Yeah. That way when people didn't notice anything strange, because nothing strange had happened to them.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, that's another way to do it, too. Yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that just the fact that this is Japan and what happened to Japan in Japan's history, it's like, yeah, there's going to be a lot of collateral damage.
Yeah.
There's kind of no surprise in my mind why almost every sci-fi anime ever starts with a giant explosion and then people are rebuilding.
Holy crap, they all do, don't they? Akira starts the giant explosion.
A lot of them do. I don't think it's everyone, so I'm not going to say every, but yeah, there's a reason they start that way.
Mm-hmm. Love Hina, giant explosion. No, just kidding.
Oh, really? I was trying to think back. I'm like, is that really how it started? I don't think so. Was there some weird radiation that killed most of the males in that culture?
Because maybe that's the only explanation.
Yeah, yeah. Like, again, like, depending on what type of game you're running, the giant gender ratio discrepancy is another one of the cliches from the IO9 article, which kind of spawned its own sub-genre of anime. The harem?
Yes.
Romantic comedy, where it's one guy and being romantically pursued by about a bazillion women.
Yeah, and it's huge. It's so common. There's so many different variations and versions of it. I think the example I've never actually watched myself, but Love Hina is supposed to be one of the best examples in that it's not only a popular one, but it's also a quality example of it. I can't speak to it for myself, but it's weird because it actually spans all of the different demographics. There's shonen versions of it. There's shoujo versions of it, seinen, josei. Yeah, it's just, I wouldn't have imagined that it would become such a popular or widespread genre, but it is.
But again, kind of like in history, it was men didn't leave the family.
Mm-hmm.
Men's wives came and lived with the family, meaning your family didn't decrease. You could still, make a living and with parents staying or living with the children once they get older,
mm-hmm.
not having a child leave the house was pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
So guys were favored over girls. And because of that, why would harem-style animes not be popular?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't want to disagree with what you're saying, but I don't think it really has to, you have to look that deeply. I mean, it's a guy being pursued by usually very gorgeous women. it's not hard to see why that would be popular with young men, especially when the story involves lots of bath scenes and accidental nudity and things like
that. Right, exactly. I mean, it's pretty much just, I don't know, it's a way to have more boob falls.
Mm-hmm.
which is an element we haven't brought up because you said I had to focus on
for it, huh?
You said I had to focus on positive ones, but
well, you know, actually, in thinking about it, the shonen genre for young boys, one of the big themes in it is learning how to deal with women, and not just in a dating sense, but also like how to interact with girls around you now that you're suddenly old enough to realize, oh, they're girls. And so, I mean, that's kind of, it brings up those themes in comedic and sometimes harmless, by some people's definition, ways, and sometimes not so harmless ways. But yeah, that's an example, is the boob fall, which is, oh, by all means, you can explain it.
Oh, thanks, yeah.
You're the one who wanted to bring it up.
All right, fair enough. So it's the classic anime cliche of bumping into someone, a woman, obviously, with your arms completely outstretched in front of you so that you fall on top of her and end up copping a feel.
Lero.
And you know what happens so often, it's not even, at least in my experience, to the point where it's funny anymore. It's just like, oh,
it happens so often that it's cliched.
Exactly. It's like, oh, here it comes again. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, again, that's part of, you know, those the kind of accidental sexual encounters that aren't really that don't go too far, but also still kind of introduce it. I can see kind of an underrunning current to it that would be a theme that younger guys would want to explore, and not just kind of that the deeper meaning to it, but of course also there's the cheap thrill,
yeah,
as well. So, and then that kind of the word for it here is fan service, fanzabisu. That's part of it, you know. There's lots of as I said, onsen scenes. Onsen is kind of a outdoor public bath where lots of young people gather together and they segregate the genders. But you know, sometimes you just make a mistake which door you're going to walk into, and oh no, there's a whole bunch of naked girls in front of me.
Right. Yeah.
Lots of splash pages and covers and things like that, and it's all there obviously to attract guys.
Right. Yeah, it's like, okay, so the onsens are separated. Oh, things are steamy, my glasses are fogged up. Oh no, how did I walk into the wrong side of the onsen? Or, you know, there's like a wooden wall separating the two, so of course everybody's going to try and climb over or like look through it. So, yeah, again, that IO9 article said the hot spring episode happens so regularly you can almost kind of set your watch by when it happens in a series.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Which has been my experience as well.
Yeah, mine too, in real life as well.
Oh, yeah, sure. Along with all those boob falls you had, huh?
Exactly. There were such accidents. But I think one of the things about it, as far as relating it to games, is that they're almost always presented tongue-in-cheek. It's kind of as kind of a comedy mishap. And you can introduce these kind of things in a game if you have some kind of fumble rules, or if you have something like Out of the Apocalypse World, where the GM can take a bit of narrative to throw twists and bumps into the players' paths, to where something like that happens, and then the players have to deal with the fallout of it, be it her punching you into space or pulling a giant hammer out of nowhere and hitting you with it or something like that.
I was going to say, that's a pretty lame GM hard move. Oh, you stumble into someone's breasts. Congratulations.
Well, exactly. It's not that that's so bad. It's the aftermath.
I guess so.
Having to deal with that, especially if you're playing a rather spineless boy, as so many of the characters in these harem genres are.
Yeah. That's true, because and a lot of them you can't have sex in them because they're kind of PG-13, so how do you have all these girls around, you know, romantically interested in this guy and not have that happen? You make him painfully shy.
Exactly. Painfully shy, or completely honorable, or just completely oblivious.
Right. Or yeah. All of them.
Exactly. Which is usually the case, I think.
Right. Well, again, as I keep saying, like, extreme might as well have been the only element we discussed, because kind of everything ends up being extreme. Mm-hmm. Where I remember, maybe this is going to sound a little negative, but one of the things that turned me off of anime, because I enjoyed it back when I was in the States, like, in addition to it being absolutely everywhere and advertising everything here to the point where I don't like it anymore, I had a lot of the Graphic Shaw How to Draw Anime books.
Oh, yeah.
Those were great books. Until I got one that was sort of the 12 personnel, or how to draw the 12 personalities of female anime characters.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I forget the title in Japanese, but it was, yeah, how to draw like the little sister type, big sister type, the like the heroine, sporty, the, you know, kind of nerd. And after reading that, I realized that the characters in most anime were incredibly formulaic, to the point where I could then look at an anime cover or advertisement and pick out with almost perfect accuracy the personalities the characters were going to have.
Mm-hmm.
And on the one hand, I suppose that's a good thing because it kind of telegraphs, you know, the intent of the anime, and it's maybe a bit reassuring, and tropes and cliches are tropes and cliches for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, horror movies have certain elements because that makes it horror.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, I suppose that helps define what the genre is, but on the other hand, I found it incredibly boring.
Well,
and I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. Because, I don't know, very rarely have I seen those kind of tropes subverted.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think that's a big reason of why I lost interest. But I guess getting to the extreme point is usually those personality types are pushed to the absolute extreme.
Mm-hmm.
So like the, as we said, talking about like the harem style anime, the bookish, painfully shy character is going to be incredibly shy. You know, the kind of little sister character who's really annoying and acts exactly like a child is going to do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So both in playing a character as, you know, a player character, pushing those extremes of personality, and as the game master, portraying NPCs, again, pushing that personality, I think would help establish your game as being anime.
Yeah, I think following along with the different kinds of character tropes within anime would definitely help you give that kind of a feel to it. But at the same time, I wouldn't want to give the advice, you know, make your characters two-dimensional.
Why not? Because anime is originally drawn on cells. Heyo!
I mean, just to add one thing to what you were saying before, you know, a lot of the shows that are made, they're made with all the thought and pomp that, you know, like the various iterations of the Saw series were. You know,
right.
There's one really good example of a harem genre, for example, that got really popular. So, of course, the same company and several other companies are going to remake it until it no longer makes money.
Right, right.
So
that seems to be what they do with Gundam.
yeah. And 50-year-old guys are still buying those models, you know, and building them in their basements.
Yep.
So why not, hey?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I think in certain types of games, it would be perfectly fine to have a completely two-dimensional character.
Mm-hmm.
I think those would tend more towards lighthearted or comedic games,
mm-hmm.
because I think more lighthearted or comedic anime would tend to do that.
Well, I mean, you can, of course, start with that. And I think a good way to go with it is to start with kind of the archetypal characters that there are in anime. But of course, as the season goes on, as the game goes on, you can bring in more depth and interesting, and even do turns and twists on those archetypes as well. And I don't think we have time to go through them all today, but you can definitely look them up on TV Tropes. So you can find different ones.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
most common or famous one of it is, the tsundere?
Oh, yeah. There's a whole bunch of rays, like tsundere and kudere and all this stuff. And mm-hmm. yeah, there's about like 6 or 7 of them. So to explain to people who might not be familiar, tsun means to be kind of, what, like cold?
Yeah,
or,
cold and hard.
Or, yeah, cold and hard. And dere is kind of like romantic.
Droopy, or soft.
Yeah, level of. So a tsundere character is the one who seems really hard and harsh on the outside, punches their love interest a lot, knocks them off into, you know, little J.J. Abrams lens flare, but at the same time actually likes their romantic love interest, just mm-hmm. doesn't know how to show it.
Exactly.
So,
and they melt as soon as the romantic scene happens.
Right, right. But you know, there's a whole bunch of those.
Mm-hmm.
And what I read was really popular about 5 to 10 years ago was called the Moe Blob.
Oh,
which
yeah,
I'm glad is done. The absolutely kind of average character who's pretty much average in absolutely everything, doesn't really have much of a personality, and nothing really interesting happens.
Sweater, big thick glasses.
Yeah.
Not my bag of tea, but hey, some people like it, so, you know.
Well, yeah. Anyway.
We're debating a little bit of what to get for the last one, but probably one of the ones that's most applicable towards games is the level up. And again, Dragon Ball Z is a prime example of this, where instead of overcoming your enemy through perseverance, well, I don't want to say that, because they do have to fight hard, and they do get damaged, they do persevere over the enemy, but the way to defeat your opponent is by getting more powerful. And either you unlock a new level within your martial arts skill, or you discover a new way to use your power that makes it even more powerful, or just you get better than them for some reason.
Or you scream really, really loud for a long time.
I know, I think you have to do that for all of them in order to unlock any of these level ups.
Right. Well, it's funny. Yeah, I can see why Dragon Ball Z is kind of the thing that comes to mind, because even in the show, they had that little meter that could, you know, read people's power level. Mm-hmm. And they were, you know, like, it's kind of like a D&D character actually being able to tell what level the character is in the fiction,
right,
as well.
His power level is over 9,000.
Right. Oh, watch out. He's a level 9 fighter, you know? So I think that could actually be pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something you could bring into a game as well, to where as soon as somebody gains a level in experience-wise, then let them level up right on the spot and then enjoy all the fun and new power that comes with it. In fact, you could time level ups to go with right when they're about to meet the villain, or partway through the fight with the big bad evil guy.
But I think some groups tend to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly a good idea, and it fits the anime genre. I was mm-hmm. going to say that, like, normally, or at least in my experience in games, there's no external indicator of level, because a character's level is a mechanical construct, not a fictional one, and so it's not represented in the fictional setting of the world. Nobody walks up to you, your character, after they've gained a level and go, you suddenly look more powerful today. Is something different? Did you cut your hair?
Yeah.
But like in an anime game, I think that would be completely appropriate.
Oh, yeah, because oftentimes they gain, like, glowing auras around
themselves. Yeah, exactly, exactly. They usually have some kind of external indicator, whether it's, like, gigantic hulking muscles, or, I don't know, they suddenly become blonde, or turn into, a giant monkey.
Exactly.
Again, to use the Dragon Ball ones. But, yeah, I think doing that would really drive home the fact that you were playing an anime game.
Mm-hmm. And it's something that a lot of RPGs use anyway. You get the level up system in D&D. You know, when you go to level 10 versus level 1, I mean, you're obviously so much more powerful, but that's not how it really works in the real world. You don't gain powers in these big leaps or to nearly the extent that you do in these games, but you do in anime. So it's something that's already built into a lot of RPGs that fits with the genre anyway. So.
Right. I mean, to carry the D&D in real life thing, you're also not playing an elf or a dragonborn or going around on adventures, but...
I hadn't noticed that, yeah. Okay, so we went through a quick list of them all. We went through about how there are no parents, how everything is exaggerated, how there's lots of different kinds of strange worlds, completely unique to each other. There's mecha, giant robots, again, exaggerated. There's the harem kind of genre.
Obviously exaggerated.
Yeah, of course. There's the archetypical personality types, again, exaggerated,
right,
and the way that people level up in an exaggerated manner. I think the big takeaway from this is exaggeration.
Yeah, you stole my Wayne note for the episode. The Wayne note was going to be to play anime, exaggerate everything,
yeah,
especially female proportions.
Exactly.
On either extreme.
Yes, I recommend this too. And a mechanical twist as well. The stunting system from Exalted might be a good way of characterizing that within some games. That or, as Wayne suggested, big boobs.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Now, it's funny, and I know we're at the end of the episode, but there's a bunch of anime-inspired games that I've read that don't really directly say they're anime or say that they're inspired from. But again, some of them do a better job than others about capturing the feel of anime in mechanics, because really that's what you have to do, since you don't have the visual media of those, you know, giant eyes and small mouths.
Yeah. Well, that one again, I think that was really interesting. What was it called? The explosion one?
Oh, Penny Explosion Perfect.
Why can't I remember the name of that?
I don't know. I don't know. How could you forget that?
Exactly, right? The premise to it is that everyone plays as a girl in an all-girl, like, psychic powers, almost X-Men school kind of thing. And but the thing that really struck me is, to make it interesting, is the system is entirely narrative-based, so that you can do those kinds of extreme exaggerations, and that's part of the way the mechanics work.
Right.
So, you know, exploding continents is not out of the question.
Right.
And I think part of the game is, you know, trying to control these overwhelming powers that you have. So it sounded like a really cool system, despite how lewd the name sounds.
Right. And there's actually nothing lewd about, you know, the game inside. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So check that one out, along with Big Eyes Small Mouth, Made RPG, and lots of other good things. Or just add some of these elements to your own game.
Right.
All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Idlered Hands. Check us out online at www.idlereadhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or stream it through iTunes or Stitcher, or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can plus one us on G+, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or you can join up and talk to us in our forums. Those are at idleredhands.com/forums, and are hosted by Happy Jacks. Thank you very much, guys. Or you can send us an email at info@idleredhands.com. Thanks a lot, and see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Well, okay, bit of a tangent, and maybe we'll cut this out. But what did you think of the way they introduced Mako Mori? Because a lot of people were saying that she was, how refreshing it was that she was not a stereotype. And I watched that movie and said she was nothing but a Japanese stereotype.
You know, I question whether I would have noticed it without you guys having railed on it. But I did, and you're right. It was pretty bad.
Well, fair enough. I guess it's a, you know, a biased opinion, because I found once someone points something out to you, you can't not see it.
Oh yeah, and so, like, don't get me wrong, I totally agree with you guys. I get really caught up in movies, and that it doesn't take much for me to suspend my disbelief. But so I might not have noticed otherwise. But yeah, I totally agree with what you guys are saying.
Yeah, the way she's introduced, okay, like, it was raining, the umbrella. It doesn't rain in movie land.
It needs a shoji flute in the background, you know.
Well, yeah, fair enough. I'm like, oh please, come on. Anyway.
Yeah.
Drive-Thru RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-Thru RPG. The one true source for RPGs. We'll be right back.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.